The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, September 2018 edition. And on the cover of this particular edition, we have the one and only Naomi Campbell. And it looks like we're going to be talking, or she's going to have a conversation with Andre Leon Talley about Dapper Dan. And then we're also going to cover other topics such as Roxane Gay, Growing Up Haitian in America, Breathing While Black by Feminista Jones, and then also cover some of or a great slay in Harlem. So first things first, we're going to cover a note from Teen Essence, or Team Essence, rather. This September is special. Sometimes things just click. That's exactly how we feel about our September fashion issue. A few months ago, a group of staffers casually gathered inside one of our conference rooms to brainstorm the most exciting ways to showcase the season's hottest designers and fall trends. We started talking about fashion legend Dapper Dan, and everyone's eyes lit up when we realized that we were all thinking Harlem and visualizing how magnificent it would be to photograph the latest Gucci Dapper Dan collection in the uptown neighborhood Dan so embodies and loves calling home. One thing quickly led to another, and within a few short weeks, Essence Creative Director Rhonda Thompson, Fashion and Beauty Director Julie Wilson, and Photo Editor Tracy Woods assembled our September issue Dream Team, Black Fashion Royalty, really in Harlem for our cover story. In attendance was designer Dapper Dan, supermodel Naomi Campbell, critically acclaimed New York City documentary photographer Jamel Shabazz, and former Vogue editor-at-large and fashion extraordinaire Andre Leon Talley. We know we're slightly biased, but we think hot is Harlem. It's everything. And we're also going to cover this particular story. We hope you do too. Our fashion coverage continues. Vibrant Things features some of the season's brightest and most eye-catching designs, dresses, suits, and separates on the beautiful breakout actress and comedian Yvonne Orji, best known for her work on Insecure. And then we're throwing the Ultimate Essence Street Style Day party on Sunday. Looks like we're going to throw it on Sunday, September 9th. And those that are in the area can join them with their host and actress comedian Amanda Seals as they celebrate style, culture, and community and honor the iconic supermodel Naomi Campbell, music superstar and celebrity chef Keyless, and plus size style influencer Kelly Brown. And this is going to be held at Dougal Greenhouse in Brooklyn, New York. Doors open at 12 p.m. and the Essence team hope to see you there. So the first article that we're going to cover today is from the Scene section. It's called The New Normal. Back for season 3, Issa Rae's Insecure resets the Hollywood standard. If there's one thing Issa Rae demands of Insecure, the hit HBO comedy she co-created, its authenticity. With the majority of shoots taking place in South Los Angeles and Inglewood, California, and a diverse set, the series feels less like TV and more like life. We're just drawing from real experiences, she says. This season has felt as if we're really on the pulse of what's happening now. And though the episodes always spark intense Twitter debates, she says she doesn't troll the platform for material. I don't mind any social media. I just want the show to feel as true as possible. No doubt having an inclusive behind-the-scenes crew has helped in achieving that goal. Since the beginning, Ray and co-executive producer and showrunner Prentice Penny have hired women in key roles. Writer and actor Natasha Rothwell, who plays Issa's scene-stealing friend Kelly. Co-executive producer Amy Aniobo and costume designer Shiona Torini are just a few of the talents. Before joining Insecure as a producer, Aniobo wrote for HBO Silicon Valley and developed her own web series. Lisa and Amy are Black. But she says her time with Insecure has meant the most. I literally almost cried because I was counting the women and I was like, there are so many on this set, she says. The show even has a mandate to cultivate an unapologetically Black style for the characters. One thing that's really important is making sure we include Black designers, says newly minted costume designer Turini. Issa, Molly, and the rest of the characters already have really defined sense of style. But we had this fun challenge to elevate it, change it, and twist it as the plot thickens with certain aspects of their roles. That said, Rothwell has a warning for fans about season 3, now airing. Y'all ain't ready. Stage right, across the pond, Andre Holland holds court in the Othello. After Moonlight won 2017's Academy Award for Best Picture, there was no Oscar curse in sight for Andre Holland. The Alabama-born actor who played the magnetic Kevin in the film's final act has actually been on a hot streak. Coming off director Ava DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time, Holland scored a lead role in the Stephen King thriller Castle Rock, now streaming on Hulu, in which his character tries to piece together missing parts of his past. For good or bad, I'm not the typical Hollywood hunk type, he says. I'm hoping to use it as an advantage, as a bit of a camouflage to slip into and out of different characters without being pegged as that guy from so-and-so film. A proclaimed old-school theater dude, Holland also tackles the character in a production of Shakespeare's Othello at the famed Globe Theater in London. He calls the role a rite of passage for Black actors. There is a way to do it that is an examination of humanity and jealousy, he explains between rehearsals. The question I asked myself when I read the play was, what makes this man, this noble, accomplished, powerful man, so vulnerable to Lago's tricks? The action, he notes, is centered on a white man who feels entitled to everything. So this play has a lot to say about where we are right now. Continuing on with scene titled Spotlight, Destiny's Child, with her debut album, Victory confirms her musical path was written in the stars. Long before Jay-Z signed her to Roc Nation, Victory Boyd was already winning. Early on, she knew she was a champion from her name alone. My parents gave all their children very special names because they wanted us to be affirmed in our identity every time people address us, says the singer-songwriter whose eight brothers and sisters have names such as Liberty, Harmony, and Angel. Victory sang with her siblings in the Boys and Girls Choirs of Detroit, founded by her father, John, before the family moved to the New York City area. The boys then began performing in Central Park, where Victory's rendition of Feeling Good by Nina Simone was captured on video. That led to a meeting with Jay-Z. There was a sense of destiny, says Victory, of the performance of a lifetime. She gave for the mogul whose own song, Empire State of Mind, had inspired her. I remember when the song came out. It was right after we moved to New York, she says. Empire just gives you a sense of hope about New York City, like you can conquer this place. This year, the singer seems ready to do just that. In June, she dropped her first full-length solo effort, The Broken Instrument, a rich blend of soul, folk, jazz, gospel, and even some spoken word. The up-and-comer also toured with Empire's Jussie Mullen, who sings with the artist on her single, Open Your Eyes, and performed at the 2018 Essence Festival. In August, she was an opener for the Miss Education of Lauryn Hill 20th Anniversary Tour, and this fall, she will headline her own. King of Stage. The Bobby Brown story takes on the life and times of the former bad boy of R&B. Think about it. 29 million people know a good thing when they see it. That's how many of us watch the true life tale of our teenage crushes on BET's The New Edition story. So on September 4th and 5th, no doubt millions more will eagerly tune in to the BET again, this time for the Bobby Brown story, which spotlights the notorious New Edition member with a mega-sized personality, Woody McClain, who enthusiastically reprises his role as Brown, is now joined by Mekhi Phifer, who plays the artist's brother turned manager Tommy Brown, and Gabrielle Dennis, who plays Whitney Houston. Much like TNES, the movie gives us a delicious taste of nostalgia. Brown's solo hits remind us why his star always shone a bit brighter. However, it's overshadowed by his headline grabbing antics and traumatic personal life, including his turbulent marriage to Houston and the loss of their daughter, Bobby Christina. At this year's American Black Film Festival, Brown, who serves as a co-producer on the film, said he was not on set when they recreated those heartbreaking moments. When asked what he missed most about Houston, Brown replied sorrowfully, "I miss my friend." Continuing on with scenes special, The Rebirth of a Nation. Again, The Rebirth of a Nation. Spike Lee's latest work, Black Klansman, is cinematic gold. While uncovering a remarkable story from the nation's past, it powerfully highlights the damning racial reality of the present. In the days following the latest presidential election, it was impossible to forecast that the country would slip backward at such incredible speed, both in word and deed. No matter one's politics, in the wake of 8 years of President Obama's intellect and poise, many of us simply weren't prepared for a new leader who seemed determined to offend African Americans, Mexicans, Muslims, women, immigrants, transgender people, Gold Star families, people with disabilities, Black professional athletes, and their mamas, nearly everyone. The times looked incredibly dark, yet even then, few could fathom the prospect of a modern-day race war. But we should have remembered that the Ku Klux Klan and all the other Nazi-loving, hate-filled groups hadn't gone anywhere. We should have known that the horrendous events in Charlottesville, Virginia, which ended with the violent death of 32-year-old Heather D. Heyer, could happen. On August 12, 2017, not even a year into the Trump presidency, hundreds of neo-Nazis, neo-fascists, and assorted Klansmen descended on the bustling college town for a rally called Unite the Right. They declared, among other menacing chants, "Jews will not replace us." The commander-in-chief placed blame on Rancor, emanating from many sides, and even later he insisted there were some very fine people among the marchers. This is America. Black Klansman, the Spike Lee joint that hit movie theaters on the one-year anniversary of the Charlottesville riots, is an urgent, sobering reminder that on the matter of race in this country, the past can be shamefully indicative of the present. Shot on film instead of digitally for a more authentic visual effect and set in the early 1970s. The motion picture is based on the riveting personal narrative of Ron Stallworth, the first African-American man to join the Colorado Springs Police Department. His memoir of the same title, but spelled as two words, Black Klansman, was originally released in 2014. It's almost impossible to believe the circumstances portrayed in the book and film. Without offering too many spoilers, know that the white supremacist sentiments captured were and are very real. But the tale is stranger than fiction. Lee admitted as much when fellow filmmaker and producer Jordan Peele, first brought the story to him. I was thinking, this sounds like the Dave Chappelle skit, Lee told the audience at Canaan's, where Black Klansman premiered internationally and took the top prize in May. I said, is this true? It was true. And in real life, Stallworth's infiltration and investigation of the Klan was a thing of genius. By phone, he posed as a racist white man eager to gain Klan membership and join their new Colorado chapter. And then he had a fellow detective who was Jewish impersonate him during actual in-person Klan meetings. Eventually, Stallworth persuaded David Duke, yes, that David Duke, who was then head of the KKK, to personally expedite his membership. Unbeknownst to the hate group and its notorious leader, Duke had granted a black man official access to the cross-burning cause. Once Stallworth is invited to be a part of the bigoted band of brothers, the plot thickens like molasses. Black Klansman is Lee as his hyper-focused best delving into the topics of race and power and telling a simple dynamic story. Fans will be overjoyed at the Spike-isms sprinkled throughout the 135-minute experience. From his most classic line, wake up, to his famous glide to camera, slow motion, close-up shot to his clever use of modern-day footage in a period piece. Spike Lee, the agitator, sociologist and cultural critic, is back. You dig? Most notably is the film's beautiful, clean cinematography. Lee shared that he was looking for a young director of photography and found Shaiz Irvin, also known as the dude who shot Beyoncé's visual album Lemonade. As with that masterpiece, Black Klansman displays an amazing use of color and light. You've just got to see the dreamy halos that circle every afro in the film. Finally, Lee's stars John David Washington, who plays Stallworth, and the stunning newcomer Laura Harrier, who portrays activist and love interest Patrice, make this an enjoyable trip around a painful topic. Young love is almost always fun to watch, but when it's peppered with heated debates about black liberation and the pigs, it's somehow all the more enchanting. It won't be lost on the viewer that Washington, like his father Denzel before him, has a symbolic or symbiotic relationship with the director. Scene by scene, Washington's Stallworth blossoms into an increasingly complex and comical character, one who is at first oddly unfamiliar, but who will later remind you of your favorite cousin who happens to be on the police force. The other side of the game. For 15 years, Ron Stallworth kept his Ku Klux Klan certificate in his office. That he received as a black undercover cop was an unbelievable detail only a few knew until 2006. In his memoir, Black Klansmen, Race, Hate, and the Undercover Investigation of a Lifetime, Stallworth writes, if one black man aided by a bevy of good, decent, dedicated, open, and liberal-minded whites and Jews can succeed in prevailing over a group of racists by making them look like the ignorant fools they truly are, then imagine what a nation of like-minded individuals can accomplish. Moving on to some lighter parts of continuing on with scenes, but this is a lighter portion of scene. Essence picks, and these are five of the favorites for the fall. So from a suspenseful novel to a new installment of a children's classic, the month's page turners offer something for everyone. True Lies, Walter Mosley, whose mysteries have amassed diehard fans, serves up a tasty twist in his new effort, John Woman. And his book is priced at $26, and it biracial Cornelius Jones reinvents himself as an unconventional history professor after his mother disappears and his father dies. Yet all the while, a horrific crime haunts the educator. Blazing a Trail. This past spring, Black Lives Matter activist and leading LGBTQ rights advocate Darnell L. Moore delivers a brave memoir, No Ashes in the Fire, priced at $26. Growing up in Camden, New Jersey, Moore was violently bullied. Three neighborhood boys attempted to set him on fire, but his palpable pain is soothed by the unconditional love of his mother. The story is a must read. Power Moves. Political strategist Donna Brazil, Democratic Party consultant Yolanda Caraway, preacher and organizer Leah Daughtry, and former CEO of the Democratic National Committee, Minion Moore, provide much-needed inspiration in for colored girls who have considered politics. This book is priced at $28.99, and it was written with Veronica Chambers. This illuminating tome is a roadmap for those who want to enter the realm of government. Picking Up the Pieces. A fictional West African country is the setting for Bernice L. McFadden's latest work, Praise Song for the Butterflies. Priced at $27.95, here we meet Abio Kata, a 9-year-old girl who is ripped from her privileged lifestyle when her father forces her to become a slave in a religious sect. Rescued after 15 years, Abio struggles to overcome dark family secrets while learning to love again. And then finally, Curtain Call. Viola Davis, the first black woman to win an Emmy, an Oscar, and a Tony for acting, is adding author to her resume. She's now a contributor to the cherished Corduroy series created by Don Freeman 50 years ago. In Corduroy Takes a Bow, priced at $17.99, the beloved teddy bear goes on his first trip to the theater. There are fun escapades at every turn. And continuing on with scenes, yet again, this title is Focus. Renaissance Women. In Looking for the Lorraine, priced at $26.95, Princeton University professor Imani Perry vividly brings to life a revealing portrait of Lorraine Hansberry, author of the classic A Raisin in the Sun. And here we'll see that Essence is asking Imani Perry some questions, and then she responds. So the first question that Essence asks her is, when did you first read A Raisin in the Sun? And Imani Perry's response is, I believe I was in fourth grade. I was completely taken by Benita. She remains such a rare character, a young black woman who's brilliant, passionate, confident, self-possessed, and intellectually curious. She's also flawed, yet even as a child, I saw her as someone to humiliate. What got you ready for this project? My entire life prepared me. I grew up in a world of activists and intellectuals. I migrated from the Deep South. I spent a lot of time in Hansberry hometown, Chicago, when I was young. She is so familiar to me. She taught me how to attend carefully to the world around me. How to work that makes people feel as well as think, and how to be courageous. How did you come up with the book title? I was inspired by Isaac Julian's timeless black queer film, Looking for Langston. Langston Hughes was one of Hansberry's mentors. She was a lesbian who, as a result of society's homophobia, kept her sexuality secret. And I felt that part of her identity was important to discuss. Also, I wanted to give readers a sense of discovering her. So many of her closest contemporaries, James Baldwin, Nina Simone, W.E.B. Du Bois, have had books written about them. Hansberry hasn't been as well documented. So I am looking for her with the hope that many more works are coming or on her are coming. Hansberry was only 34 when she died. How do you think millennials, particularly black women, will identify with her? More than anything, they will view her as a passion seeker. She was so hungry for life. She had so many ideas that went in dozens of directions. She was bold and could be snarky and brass, but also tender and vulnerable. It's hard to learn about her and not be motivated to pursue your own passions, no matter how big or inchoate. What are some of the takeaways for readers? I would like people to understand that the complex issues we face today pertaining to race, class, gender, sexuality, and politics are not new. The struggle for freedom is long. We can learn so much from seeing how a figure from the past grappled with it. I also hope readers get a feeling for the genius of Hansberry. Hers was a beautifully lived journey. I want them to feel bolstered by Hansberry's courage, stepping fully into the world with such a deep sense of possibility that the fear of failure does not stop you. It's something we all should be doing. And again, the book is titled Looking for Lorraine, and it is priced at $26.95. And it is, it brings to life a revealing portrait of Lorraine Hansberry, author of the classic A Raisin in the Sun. So it looks like that we actually have run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. And I am Nicole Hunter reading today's episode of Essence. And be sure to listen next time. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.